Back together again, you and I, on a Tuesday, the 18th of April, 2023, right here on Connecticut Today. We looked at a controversy regarding a recent unsanctioned car show at Seaside Park in Bridgeport. Did the city and the police overreact or not? Connecticut Energy Marketers Association head Chris Herb briefed us again on a proposed bill allowing a state commissioner to set broad environmental policy without approval from the General Assembly. And our commuter advocate Jim Cameron dropped by to talk about the implementation of new state DOT construction zone speed cameras. You know, you can tell a lot just by looking. Like Yogi used to say, you can learn a lot just by observing or watching or whatever that is. But you can tell a lot about where society is and where people are by how they react to things, especially if it's the rules don't apply to me crowd, or where do you get off blankety blank 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 crowd. What am I talking about here? And I guess this has been brewing in Bridgeport here for the past couple of days. And I'd love to know how you feel about this. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. See this today, Brian Lockhart's story, our buddy Brian Lockhart, who's been on the show a few times from Hearst, Connecticut Media. Bridgeport police break up unauthorized car show at Seaside Park. It was chaos. In this story, 3 days after three people were shot at a large unpermitted music event at Seaside Park, police had to be called back to break up an unauthorized car show. Witnesses say involved dozens of out-of-state vehicles. Parks Commission Chairman Bonjet Labrador said it was chaos. He said that Monday at the scene. Labrador and City Council members Jorge Cruz and Scott Burns meeting at Seaside Sunday afternoon to investigate complaints from residents about loud music and lots of cars, mainly from New Jersey. I don't know about you, but if you're in Jersey, I guess it's a thing to say, hey, let's go to Bridgeport. It's a nice day in parts of Jersey. Hey, let's go up and set up a pseudo car show in Bridgeport. Ah, but this gets curiouser, kids. Brian writes, Cruz represents the south end where the park is located. Burns lives in the Black Rock area, which is separated from Seaside Park by water. Despite the disturbance, Burns said, quote, I heard music and then I started to hear from some constituents and realized something was going on. All three reaching out to the police department. Cruz filming the local law enforcement response, posting it on Facebook. His footage showing two long lines of vehicles slowly driving out of the waterfront site, which is considered, says here, one of only Bridgeport's key attractions for locals and visitors. Cruz narrates, they're cleaning the park. Looks like a bunch of ants leaving the place. Huge crowd out here, a lot of cars, loud music, all that stuff. Police clearing the park. Scott Appleby, another friend of the radio station, Bridgeport's director of emergency management, said Monday that there was an unsanctioned car show being held at Seaside Park. Now, my point in this is this, and you know, they cleared it out and it was fine. But if you go to the Connecticut Post's Facebook site, I was reading this just off the Connecticut Post website here. If you go to the Facebook site, you get a real interesting take on this. And it's from a lot of people who I guess don't understand rules. And all you have to do is go to the comments section on Facebook, you know, regarding this whole thing. Oh, who are the Bridgeport people to say that people can't gather in a park for a get-together? Really? Oh, who are the people to say that you have to have a permit for this stuff? Really? Where does Bridgeport get off? Yada, yada, yada. It's amazing, isn't it? Boy, you talk about what I like to call the coarseness of society now. I mean, there are people, I was looking at it, right before the show began, Go to the Connecticut Post Facebook page. Sunday's car show was the second such big gathering at Seaside Park. In the past few days, the Post puts here, and you've got people writing some of the out-and-out dumbest things I've ever read in my life, and they're incredulous that the neighbors complained around Seaside Park. This guy writes, what's wrong with a car show at a public park? Well, sir, nothing is wrong with it as long as you have a permit. Man, I'm urging you, go to the Connecticut Post Facebook page and take a look at the people who think there's nothing wrong with this. Hey, let's let a bunch of people just drive up from New Jersey and hold a car show. The heck with any regulations the city might have. All you cranky people that live in Black Rock and near Seaside Park, where do you get off not letting us have our fun? This is amazing. This is amazing. Man. Here's somebody else writing. This is a prime example of everyone so concerned about everybody else. Take care of your own family and don't worry about everybody else. Listen to this guy. Listen to this guy. How dare you people who live in the neighborhood don't want illegal, unsanctioned events? Man. I tell you, you got some real specimens on this Facebook page here. Man, some guy says, ridiculous. Really? That the cops broke it up? Really? Some guy writes, or some woman writes, for doing something fun and peaceful. Really? Really? I guess rules don't count anymore. It's not a car show, this guy rides. Just a lot of people with nice cars parking to enjoy the beach. Nobody should have left. Those who do leave or do so, licensed likely because they're not licensed. Really, sir? So a bunch of people come up from New Jersey. A bunch of people come up from New Jersey to hang out in Bridgeport, Connecticut. Boy, it's a tourist attraction, isn't it? Man, oh man, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. It's amazing how many people just don't like rules. It's just shocking how many people don't like rules. Nothing says you can't have a car show from what I'm reading here, but apparently it was unauthorized, as in, I guess, there was not a proper permit. Ah, you shouldn't have permits, some people are saying on this string. It's frightening. I'm telling you, there's 100 comments here, at least half of them make me wonder. Man, oh man. So it's a park which is free to get into until next month, this person writes, and a lot of people with cars met up at the park because the cars are modified and you're labeling it a car show. Were there vendors selling car parts? Were they charging to get into the park? It's interesting here. However, there is a little bit of sanity. Thankfully, there is somebody with a functioning brain on this comment string. Yes, people, this woman writes, it's tough to comprehend, but a gathering of 50 or more requires a permit. Stop crying and just obey the rules. Do you people really think there aren't rules for safety reasons in parks just because they're public? Thank you. And then this other person writes, since when is it a crime or a car meet just because a bunch of people meet at a seaside? There were no vendors, nobody was selling anything, no one was charging for parking. Yeah, but that's not the point. The point is, you need a permit. And here's another woman that on this string here, she distills it down. Why are they coming to Bridgeport all the way from New Jersey? Why not have their car show in New Jersey at the Jersey Shore? Good job for the police making sure the park remains nice for Bridgeport residents. And if you want to have a car show, get a permit. Oh, but that must cost money. We can't do that. So what do you think? Did the cops and or the city overreact here? It was just a bunch of people showing off their cars. I'm sure there were nice cars there. Cars, you know, far better than my boring white suburban pudgy Italian ball guy mobile that I drive every day. But it was broken up, and it's an interesting look here. This gentleman has been with us numerous times over the past few years, Chris Herb, who heads the Connecticut Energy Marketers Association, representing a lot of locally owned, many family-owned heating oil dealers, gas stations, convenience stores, keeping an eye on a bill that I've been warning you about. I warned you about this a bunch of weeks ago, Senate Bill 1145, which has got a lot of not just Republicans, but some Democrats worried that this would allow the General Assembly to essentially wash its hands of any responsibility with implementing major environmental policy and hand a lot of that authority over to whomever is the commissioner of the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection. Chris is here. Hello, Chris. How are you?
Good afternoon.
Chris, what are you hearing on this? Last time we spoke, I know there was discussion on this, some debate. It's been written about, people saying, oh, it's not as bad as people think it is. Other people saying, yes, it certainly is. What's the update on this, if any?
Sure. So since last time we spoke, the bill has come out of the Environment Committee. It was split down party lines. So it is passed and it is moving through the process. And that's why we decided to try to engage the public a little bit more to make them aware of the potential cost implications that the bill would have on a number of different activities that they're involved in, from home heating to driving their cars.
You know, Chris, the disturbing part of this that you and I have talked about, and I've even talked to some Democrats about this on the show, past and present, says, hey, you know, something like environmental policy, which is important, I think both sides understand that, but it should be vigorously debated and voted on. Yet, I guess this bill would essentially, as I like to say, pull a Pontius Pilate, you know, allow the General Assembly to wash its hands here and give some really broad powers to the deep commissioner, whomever that may be.
So, Paul, actually really important, and I think that this part of the bill and the concerns about a transfer of power from elected officials in the legislature to appointed bureaucrats has actually resonated on both sides of the aisle. Mm-hmm. So that took us a little bit by surprise, because obviously when you're talking about environmental policies that have very harsh price implications on fuel, I would think that that would be the lead. But what's really captured, I think, a lot of Democrats in Hartford is this abdicating that power is fundamentally against their beliefs. And that has helped garner additional opposition to the bill.
Chris Herb with us. A few more minutes. Our buddy from the Connecticut Energy Marketers Association talking about Senate Bill 1145, which passed out of committee recently, but now is inducing, I guess, a little squeamishness, not just among Republicans who are set against this, but a lot of Democrats, as Chris told us. And Chris, one thing I remember reading about this bill is it would give, again, an unelected bureaucrat, whomever that may be, the deep commissioner, the commissioner of Energy, Department of Energy and Environmental Protection, Chris, I guess, the ability to enter into environmental agreements covering Connecticut citizens with Canadian provinces. Is that right?
Yeah, and I think that's what concerns us the most, is that, you know, legislators who are looking to duck the responsibility of having to vote on policies that would increase gasoline, heating oil, propane, natural gas prices is tempting, and we have to do our best to have them resist that temptation to transfer the power from elected officials to bureaucrats, to appointed bureaucrats. I mean, this is such a profound shift in power that the governor doesn't even have this ability to enter into these agreements without legislative authority. That's what this bill does, and so we're concerned that if this goes unchecked, you know, weak kneed legislators will hand over this responsibility easily to the commissioner of DEEP.
Is there any indication, Chris Herb, about how the governor actually feels about this? In other words, they could pass this, he could veto it, and then you don't know whether the veto could be overridden. But has Governor Lamont given any at least recent update as to how he thinks about this in his gut?
No, we have not heard anything out of the governor's office directly about the bill. I will tell you that it is a department bill. So typically, the commissioner works and the department works for the governor. So in a way, we're concerned that a commissioner's bill or a department bill like this would have ever been entertained if it didn't have the blessing of the governor. Now he has not publicly stated anything on it, so I can't say for a certainty that that's the case. We've been working legislators on this. And again, the good government angle about transfer of entering into tax agreements with Canadian provinces or other states like California has drawn a lot of concern, which we're happy with. But let's not miss that this is, if the deep commissioner got this power and then she entered into a Canadian like cap and trade program, this is 83 cents a gallon on home heating oil, 72 cents a gallon on gasoline at a maximum. The way California does it is they cap what the tax is. And those are big numbers. I mean, this drags middle income working families, seniors on fixed incomes, people in low income communities underwater.
You know, Chris, when we talked about this a couple of years ago here on the show, a lot of this surfaced initially as the transportation climate initiative. You know, we were told, hey, if we don't agree to this, the roads are going to crumble, the air is going to turn to fire, and we're all going to die. And I remember when folks like yourself and, hosts like me and other hosts around the state, we said, hey, we're reading here that there are going to be additional taxes here. Like you say, Chris, gasoline, diesel, home heating oil. At first they out now, Chris, if I remember correctly, said, no. Then enough people got pressure on them. If I remember, they said, well, okay, but it's only a few cents a gallon, which I remember back then wasn't close to what TCI actually wanted. And I remember, Chris, also that even people, I think it was the Sierra Club or some organization said, there's no guarantee as to what this money is going to be used for.
Yeah, I will tell you this. I had a much greater understanding of what TCI was going to do and what it wasn't going to do. Mm-hmm. It was much easier to calculate what those numbers are. And you're right. 2 years later, did the bridges fall down? Did the roads crumble? We're in no worse position today than we were then, except for actually the state's in a better financial position. The transportation fund is flush with money for many years going into the out years. This is sneaky. This bill uses words like market-based compliance mechanisms. this is them trying to do an end around on the public. Not only would the legislature be able to avoid being directly held accountable for raising, adding a fourth tax to gasoline or raising the price of home heating fuels, but then they would also, what are they going to use this for? It's not even spelled out in the bill. It's just like, give the commissioner the power, she'll find the way to tax, and then the government can have fun with our money.
Folks, if you want to check out CEMA, it's online, CTEMA.com, CTEMA.com, the Connecticut Energy Marketers Association. Our buddy, our pal, Chris Herb joins us. Chris, thank you. Appreciate him. We'll keep an eye on this. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Paul.
Appreciate it. All right. And folks, here it is. Now, if you want to register, and I never tell you how to vote or whatever, but if you want to register your opposition to this, do it gently, be courteous, whether it's an email to your local legislator or to the governor's office or a phone call, tell them you are concerned with the costs associated with SB 1145. And tell them that, you don't think this is the way to go. The problem with this is, and again, just to, get out of the woods here so you can understand this. The problem is that this would allow the General Assembly largely to wash its hands. They'd be allowed to go full Pontius Pilate here and say, hey, we don't want to debate X, Y, and Z on environmental taxes and cap and trade. We're going to let the commissioner of deep just do that. No, it doesn't work that way. Have the balls, if you'll excuse me, literally for guys in the legislature, figuratively for women, but I know that's That's a point of confusion these days. Oh, look at that. There's no... Oh, whatever. Look me in the eye now. Thank you. Look, you got to have the guts to debate this stuff. Get up there and hit the green or red light, the yay or nay light on this. But again, this bill, it's SB 1145. SB 1145. It concerns a bill that, again, would allow the, an unelected bureaucrat, whomever the Connecticut commissioner is of the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection, to simply say, well, we're going to do this, and this, we're going to do this. This may be entering into policies with Canadian provinces and other states that the General Assembly doesn't have the guts to vote on. Can't have that, folks. And again, as Chris said, it would likely, although not definitely, likely put a fourth tax on gasoline and another tax. Hey, who's up for 70 cents more on a gallon of heating oil, huh? Be careful who you vote for, folks. I'm telling you, this is why when you blindly reelect the same Democratic leadership in Hartford over and over and over again because they show up at your kid's rubber chicken Little League dinner or because they show up at the Memorial Day parade or they have these, you know, dopey coffee events in a local diner and you keep reelecting these people, that you pay for it. You always pay for it. We have this gentleman on a regular basis, Jim Cameron, columnist, Talking Transportation. You can find in the Connecticut Mirror and in several other locales. And an important reason to have him on, particularly this week, because of what has started up on Connecticut roads. Mr. Cameron, good afternoon to you. How are you?
I'm fine, Dr. Pacelli, and yourself?
Thank you. I'm doing relatively well, Jim. All of my limbs work, and I'm living the dream. What can I tell you?
Great. Not practicing dentistry without a license, I hope.
I heard that, too.
I heard that story. That's a great story.
You love that, huh? But, Jim, once a radio news guy, always a radio news guy, right? Yeah. You hear that, and you say, boy, there's a kicker if I ever heard one. Jim,
and we got Chris from Waterbury who's waiting to talk to you, I don't want to be
going
too long here. So.
No. We have good, patient listeners here, and I didn't want to jam them in there. Jim, though, as funny as that story is with the dentistry, this is a very serious story. Your column here, remember the dangers Connecticut highway workers face. This about the fact that people, Jim, are still apparently not slowing down to the point that we need these cameras out there. And there is a picture, Jim, that I've actually copied and sent to people at the top of this article at the DOT headquarters who are complaining about this, these cameras. I have sent this picture to them and your column and saying, this is why. A lot of people don't realize how dangerous this is.
So that picture that you're referring to is a memorial that's right inside the front lobby of the Connecticut Department of Transportation headquarters up in Newington. It's a collection of orange safety cones wrapped in black crepe because it's a tribute to some 40 men and women at the DOT who've been killed in recent years doing their jobs working out on the highways. 40. Now, on an average day, there's something like 1,500 DOT staffers and contractors who are out there working on the highways, especially now because it's, you know, spring construction season. But what they've done is, given that this is National Work Zone Awareness Week, mm-hmm. put that on your calendar, I'm sure. But what they're doing is they're not only reminding us to slow down in work zones, but they're trying to enforce that by putting some, and the state's first, automatic radar speed cameras in some of these work zone areas. So if you go through one of these work zone areas and you're going at more than 15 miles an hour over the speed limit, this gizmo will pick it up and it will send you a ticket, or the owner of your car at least, automatically. First ticket, just a warning. Second ticket, $75. Next ticket is $150. So the idea is that, you know, they're going to try to incentivize people to follow the rules and slow down. But they're even telling us where these cameras are. Like, there's one on I-95 near Norwalk. There's another up near Danbury on 84. There's one up in the Waterbury area as well, too. So nobody could say that they didn't know this was coming. There are signs as you enter these work zones that are telling you there are speed zone cameras in effect here. And the hope is that, you know, maybe this will be the incentive that people need to slow down and not kill people trying to repair our highways.
Get back to open phones momentarily. A few more minutes here with the gentleman we check in on from time to time. A check in with Jim Cameron, his Talking Transportation column in the Connecticut Mirror and other spots. This one, remember the dangers of highway, Connecticut highway workers face. And now we have the introduction. They say experimentally, which is what the legislature okayed, speed cameras in three locations. Jim, I guess from what I've been reading, the thing that broke the camel's back here and really pushed him over the edge to do this was a DOT study over a couple of mornings where there were literally hundreds of vehicles just buzzing right through construction sites, I think on the turnpike in Westport. And I guess a bunch of people, Jim, threw their arms up and said, yeah, this is it. We got to do something here.
Well, you and I have talked about how crazy drivers are out on the highways these days. Maybe not at rush hour when it's bumper to bumper. But, they did a study, and they looked at one construction zone up in the Hartford area, mm-hmm. and they found out that 60% of the vehicles were speeding through that work zone. Last November, there was some bozo who was clocked driving at night through a Norwalk work zone, mm-hmm. doing 90 miles an hour through a work zone. Now, you know, somebody's got to stop that kind of behavior. We don't have enough state troopers out there. They're not out there in numbers, you know, enforcing the speed rules. So maybe this technology will be of some assistance. Yeah, it's an experimental program. And yeah, maybe it's the camel's nose in the tent of seeing more red light cameras around the state, some sort of technology that has been, you know, really scorned by the legislature over the years. But we've got to do something to stop the carnage on our highways.
Yeah, and Jim, maybe it takes, you know, these knuckleheads getting, like you said, first of all, the first one's a warning. They're not going to have to pay anything on the first one. Second and third will mean we're going to separate you from some of your cash. And also, you know, Jim Cameron, you have the situation here where it's not like they're going to nail you after you're 1 mile an hour over the limit. I mean, you know, for the dummies out there, they are putting in a little bit of a cushion in this, right?
Well, it's more than a cushion. It's you got to be going 15 miles an hour over the speed limit as posted in the construction zone. That's quite a margin of error there, you know. And I asked the DOT, why 15 miles an hour? That's what the legislation said. I mean, if I was, and I'm not running for office, Paul, trust me, I'm not running for higher
no,
office.
No, come on,
the
Jim.
The RTM on which I serve.
Come on.
No.
Governor Cameron. No. It's got a nice ring to it, doesn't
please.
It?
Please. Not at all. Thank you. But I would have made it, you know, if the speed limit is posted at 45 in mm-hmm. the work zone and you're going 50, that's worth giving you a ticket or at least a warning. So 15 miles an hour in a 45 zone. You're still talking about, 15 and 45? That's 60 miles an hour.
Yeah, that can easily kill somebody, sure. Yeah, yeah.
People, you know, look, folks, you're driving home now, and it's bumper-to-bumper traffic on I-95. But those people that are out there from DOT doing their construction work are trying to keep you safe, trying to make the road safer. And, okay, so people always say, well, why don't they do the construction on the overnight period when traffic is lighter? Well, too many complaints about noise, and nighttime is when those bozos are out there driving 90 miles an
yes.
hour. You can hear them out on the highway.
Oh, you know, Jim, and I find
so they
that
do the work 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. and try to avoid the rush hours.
Yeah,
so,
and there's stuff they have to do at night, Jim. If they're closing down lanes to move beams into position, or you know, road plates and everything into position, they do that at night. So, you know, Jim will have to see it. And I know there are going to be some naysayers who are going to say, well, this is going to open the door, as you said, for speed cameras in cities and towns. Well, maybe that'll make people from stop running the red lights.
Speed cameras are a lot cheaper than paying state troopers $100,000 a year.
Yeah, absolutely.
And maybe they'll actually help people slow down.
All right, Jim, we had a question. Hang on here. We have a question from a listener, Mr. Cameron.
No, I'm not running for governor. I'm sorry.
Somebody said, asked an interesting question, and thank you to this caller, because I've seen it too. More and more trucks in the third lane. I mean, big.
Yeah.
That's illegal, right?
It is. In most of I-95 in Connecticut, there are signs that say trucks are not allowed in the left-hand lane, the passing lane. They pretty much are supposed to stick to the middle lane or, you know, get to the right if they're going to be getting off the highway. Here again, it's a matter of, you know, a state trooper seeing it and being able to enforce something like that. You know, the DOT uses trucks. You know, sometimes in a construction zone, you'll see a dump truck, some big heavy truck with a sign on the back of it saying, you know, construction ahead. You know, and people are going, well, why is that empty truck driving around? Well, that's called the crash truck.
Mm-hmm.
And that truck is designed to keep construction workers safe. Believe it or not, that crash truck was struck 24 times last year.
Wow.
By people that were driving too fast, couldn't slow down, couldn't move over, and they, you know, that's why that truck is there. It's to take the impact instead of some, you know, poor state worker wearing just an orange vest to protect them.
All right, yeah, 24 times, so Jim, I figure it's a handful of times. That's a lot, man. It's twice a month. That's not good at all.
Yep.
Listen,
exactly.
Jim, we will make you the unofficial governor of Connecticut today. So I just bestow that on you, and I'll wait. I'll give you the time you need down the road for your own state of the state address. How's that? We'll work that.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Pacelli. I appreciate that.
Jim Cameron, check out his Talking Transportation column. Jim, thank you. We'll talk next month, sirs. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. Be well.
All right, there you go. How about that, folks? Yes, to that caller who called in that question, Eric, I'm seeing that. Left lane. Big rigs are not allowed in the left lane. But as Jim said, number one, you have to see the violation. So a state trooper's got to see it. Then he or she's got to start up their car. They've got to gain on that truck. They've got to move all the way over. And, you know, you turn the lights and siren on. Is the trucker going to see you? Okay, then, oh, geez, I got to move over. Then the trooper and the trucker have to scoot into the center lane and the right lane. And what are the odds that's going to happen safely?